Welcome to 3-Minute Lesson. This week's theme, sensory gain. Today's topic, super tasters. Human taste is not functionally different from other mammals, yet humans are very opinionated about it. Taste is picked up by taste buds in the mouth. Taste buds are actually cells with dozens of taste receptors, and the average human has several thousands of these cells, with most being on the tongue. Human taste receptors come in two types, sweet and bitter. They can be activated by a variety of chemicals. Combinations of the receptors and the ways they are activated by molecules in food form the basic flavors, saltiness, sweetness, bitterness, sourness, and umami. Interpretation of taste occurs in the brain, and what tastes good or bad is sometimes universal, genetically determined, and/or a learned behavior. A readily apparent fact about human taste is that it varies from person to person. What tastes good can vary, but so can someone's ability to identify the more subtle flavors in food. You might be eating a meal, and someone remarks on the minute inclusion of cinnamon, but you cannot detect it at all. In 1991, the term supertaster emerged as a way to describe people in a laboratory setting who were more sensitive to a specific bitter chemical. The term then went on to mean people more sensitive to salt, and eventually as the ability to differentiate more ingredients in food. Studies have shown these supertasters, individuals with acute taste perception, are overrepresented in chefs, food critics, and wine critics, although many other experiments have shown that wine tasting is not a scientifically reliable discipline. Supertasting, in scientific studies, mainly test very specific chemical compounds in varied doses and ask for verbal descriptions. They often find an individual may be highly sensitive to a chemical like capsaicin, which makes chili pepper spicy, but perhaps not to sucrose, a type of sugar. Supertasting can also create negative associations with food, picky eating. Someone with sensitivity to compounds resulting in an enhanced bitter taste can, of course, cause strong aversions. Picky eating is common in people with autism. Research has shown that these individuals do not have differences in taste buds or receptors, but rather in the brain's interpretation of the taste. Children, on the other hand, have actual differences in their taste buds compared to adults. Children have an overall greater density of taste buds and a greater drive for sweetness, but heightened sensitivity to bitterness. Humans are born with an innate sweet tooth, but the optimal amount of sweetness in food decreases with age. This is why retrying some of your favorite childhood snacks are sweeter than you remember. This has been your 3-Minute Lesson. See you tomorrow. Welcome to 3-Minute Lesson. This week's theme, sensory gain. Today's topic, super tasters. Human taste is not functionally different from other mammals, yet humans are very opinionated about it. Taste is picked up by taste buds in the mouth. Taste buds are actually cells with dozens of taste receptors, and the average human has several thousands of these cells, with most being on the tongue. Human taste receptors come in two types, sweet and bitter. They can be activated by a variety of chemicals. Combinations of the receptors and the ways they are activated by molecules in food form the basic flavors, saltiness, sweetness, bitterness, sourness, and umami. Interpretation of taste occurs in the brain, and what tastes good or bad is sometimes universal, genetically determined, and/or a learned behavior. A readily apparent fact about human taste is that it varies from person to person. What tastes good can vary, but so can someone's ability to identify the more subtle flavors in food. You might be eating a meal, and someone remarks on the minute inclusion of cinnamon, but you cannot detect it at all. In 1991, the term supertaster emerged as a way to describe people in a laboratory setting who were more sensitive to a specific bitter chemical. The term then went on to mean people more sensitive to salt, and eventually as the ability to differentiate more ingredients in food. Studies have shown these supertasters, individuals with acute taste perception, are overrepresented in chefs, food critics, and wine critics, Although, many other experiments have shown that wine tasting is not a scientifically reliable discipline. Supertasting, in scientific studies, mainly test very specific chemical compounds in varied doses and ask for verbal descriptions. They often find an individual may be highly sensitive to a chemical like capsaicin, which makes chili pepper spicy, but perhaps not to sucrose, a type of sugar. Supertasting can also create negative associations with food, picky eating. Someone with sensitivity to compounds resulting in an enhanced bitter taste can, of course, cause strong aversions. Picky eating is common in people with autism. Research has shown that these individuals do not have differences in taste buds or receptors, but rather in the brain's interpretation of the taste. Children, on the other hand, have actual differences in their taste buds compared to adults. Children have an overall greater density of taste buds and a greater drive for sweetness, but heightened sensitivity to bitterness. Humans are born with an innate sweet tooth, but the optimal amount of sweetness in food decreases with age. This is why retrying some of your favorite childhood snacks are sweeter than you remember. This has been your 3-minute lesson. See you tomorrow. Welcome to 3-Minute Lesson. This week's theme, sensory gain. Today's topic, super tasters. Human taste is not functionally different from other mammals, yet humans are very opinionated about it. Taste is picked up by taste buds in the mouth. Taste buds are actually cells with dozens of taste receptors, and the average human has several thousands of these cells, with most being on the tongue. Human taste receptors come in two types, sweet and bitter. They can be activated by a variety of chemicals. Combinations of the receptors and the ways they are activated by molecules in food form the basic flavors, saltiness, sweetness, bitterness, sourness, and umami. Interpretation of taste occurs in the brain, and what tastes good or bad is sometimes universal, genetically determined, and/or a learned behavior. A readily apparent fact about human taste is that it varies from person to person. What tastes good can vary, but so can someone's ability to identify the more subtle flavors in food. You might be eating a meal, and someone remarks on the minute inclusion of cinnamon, but you cannot detect it at all. In 1991, the term supertaster emerged as a way to describe people in a laboratory setting who were more sensitive to a specific bitter chemical. The term then went on to mean people more sensitive to salt, and eventually as the ability to differentiate more ingredients in food. Studies have shown these supertasters, individuals with acute taste perception, are overrepresented in chefs, food critics, and wine critics, although many other experiments have shown that wine tasting is not a scientifically reliable discipline. Supertasting, in scientific studies, mainly test very specific chemical compounds in varied doses and ask for verbal descriptions. They often find an individual may be highly sensitive to a chemical like capsaicin, which makes chili pepper spicy, but perhaps not to sucrose, a type of sugar. Supertasting can also create negative associations with food, picky eating. Someone with sensitivity to compounds resulting in an enhanced bitter taste can, of course, cause strong aversions. Picky eating is common in people with autism. Research has shown that these individuals do not have differences in taste buds or receptors, but rather in the brain's interpretation of the taste. Children, on the other hand, have actual differences in their taste buds compared to adults. Children have an overall greater density of taste buds and a greater drive for sweetness, but heightened sensitivity to bitterness. Humans are born with an innate sweet tooth, but the optimal amount of sweetness in food decreases with age. This is why retrying some of your favorite childhood snacks are sweeter than you remember. This has been your 3-minute lesson. See you tomorrow.
DeepEnglish.com.
The people of Vietnam suffered through war from 1955 to 1975. But for one man, the war took much longer to end. Ho Van Thanh was a soldier for more than 15 years. One terrible day, a mine exploded and killed his wife and two of his sons and completely destroyed his home. In a panic, Thanh grabbed his two-year-old son, Ho Van Lang, and fled deep into the jungle, where he planned to live until the war ended. Just 2 years later, the war did end, but Ho and his son had no way of hearing the news. The two of them ended up living in the jungle for more than 40 years, believing that the war was still raging on. Thanh entered the jungle when he was just 42, and his son was 2. By the time they were found, he was an 82-year-old man, and his son was middle-aged. Local people searching for wood deep in the forest found Thanh and his son living in a treehouse 20 feet in the air. Thanh, who had been a well-known blacksmith in his village, had made several arrows and other hunting tools. When they were found, they were wearing loincloths made of tree bark. They survived by hunting, growing forest vegetables, and planting corn. Even though neither of the men remembered much of the local language, they kept a few mementos of their old lives in their treehouse. The father's military pants were neatly folded, and beside them sat the little red coat his son was wearing when they fled. Because Thanh was in poor health, he was carried out of the jungle on a stretcher, with his son Lang at his side. Their arrival shocked the townspeople, because many thought they had died years ago. Once they were in the town, Thanh and Lang suffered from reverse culture shock. Thanh refused to eat, and both men tried to escape back into the jungle. Relatives tried to keep them in town because they were worried about Tan's health. "We know he wants to escape my house to go back to the forest, so we have to keep an eye on him now," says his nephew. Fast forward a year and a half to 2015, and Lang is adjusting. Having lived alone for so long, with a father who rarely talked, he still has trouble communicating. But modern comforts and vices such as TV, cell phones, and cigarettes have won him over. His father, on the other hand, still wants to return to the forest.
DeepEnglish.com.
The people of Vietnam suffered through war from 1955 to 1975, but for one man, the war took much longer to end. Ho Van Thanh was a soldier for more than 15 years. One terrible day, a mine exploded and killed his wife and two of his sons and completely destroyed his home. In a panic, Thanh grabbed his two-year-old son, Ho Van Lang, and fled deep into the jungle, where he planned to live until the war ended. Just 2 years later, the war did end, but Ho and his son had no way of hearing the news. The two of them ended up living in the jungle for more than 40 years, believing that the war was still raging on. Thanh entered the jungle when he was just 42, and his son was 2. By the time they were found, he was an 82-year-old man, and his son was middle-aged. Local people searching for wood deep in the forest found Thanh and his son living in a treehouse 20 feet in the air. Thanh, who had been a well-known blacksmith in his village, had made several arrows and other hunting tools. When they were found, they were wearing loincloths made of tree bark. They survived by hunting, growing forest vegetables, and planting corn. Even though neither of the men remembered much of the local language, they kept a few mementos of their old lives in their treehouse. The father's military pants were neatly folded, and beside them sat the little red coat his son was wearing when they fled. Because Thanh was in poor health, he was carried out of the jungle on a stretcher, with his son Lang at his side. Their arrival shocked the townspeople, because many thought they had died years ago. Once they were in the town, Thanh and Lang suffered from reverse culture shock. Thanh refused to eat, and both men tried to escape back into the jungle. Relatives tried to keep them in town because they were worried about Thanh's health. "We know he wants to escape my house to go back to the forest, so we have to keep an eye on him now," says his nephew. Fast forward a year and a half to 2015, and Lang is adjusting. Having lived alone for so long, with a father who rarely talked, he still has trouble communicating. But modern comforts and vices such as TV, cell phones, and cigarettes have won him over. His father, on the other hand, still wants to return to the forest.
DeepEnglish.com.
The people of Vietnam suffered through war from 1955 to 1975, but for one man, the war took much longer to end. Ho Van Thanh was a soldier for more than 15 years. One terrible day, a mine exploded and killed his wife and two of his sons and completely destroyed his home. In a panic, Thanh grabbed his two-year-old son, Ho Van Lang, and fled deep into the jungle, where he planned to live until the war ended. Just 2 years later, the war did end, but Ho and his son had no way of hearing the news. The two of them ended up living in the jungle for more than 40 years, believing that the war was still raging on. Thanh entered the jungle when he was just 42, and his son was two. By the time they were found, he was an 82-year-old man, and his son was middle-aged. Local people searching for wood deep in the forest found Thanh and his son living in a treehouse 20 feet in the air. Thanh, who had been a well-known blacksmith in his village, had made several arrows and other hunting tools. When they were found, they were wearing loincloths made of tree bark. They survived by hunting, growing forest vegetables, and planting corn. Even though neither of the men remembered much of the local language, they kept a few mementos of their old lives in their treehouse. The father's military pants were neatly folded, and beside them sat the little red coat his son was wearing when they fled. Because Thanh was in poor health, he was carried out of the jungle on a stretcher, with his son Lang at his side. Their arrival shocked the townspeople, because many thought they had died years ago. Once they were in the town, Thanh and Lang suffered from reverse culture shock. Thanh refused to eat, and both men tried to escape back into the jungle. Relatives tried to keep them in town because they were worried about Tan's health. "We know he wants to escape my house to go back to the forest, so we have to keep an eye on him now," says his nephew. Fast forward a year and a half to 2015, and Lang is adjusting. Having lived alone for so long, with a father who rarely talked, he still has trouble communicating. But modern comforts and vices such as TV, cell phones, and cigarettes have won him over. His father, on the other hand, still wants to return to the forest.
Welcome to 3-Minute Lesson. This week's theme, art. Today's topic, how tattoos work. Tattoos inject ink into the skin, creating a pigmented design that can last for decades or longer. Tattoos are found in cultures all around the world and date back to at least 3300 BCE in both Egypt and Europe. Tattooing existed in Native Americans before contact, broadly and ubiquitously in the Indo-Pacific and in sub-Saharan Africa. Although the purpose and design of tattoos varies between cultures, it is one of the most widely shared ancient and modern cultural practices. The secret to tattoos is in the ink. If you inject ink from something like a pen into skin, it will stick around for a short period of time but will quickly be broken down and removed by the body. Tattoo ink typically contains metals, such as nickel, cobalt, or copper, which can confer the different colors. When injected deep into the dermis layer of the skin, the resident immune cells take notice. Phagocytes are a type of immune cell, and some permanently reside in the dermis. Typically, their role is to fight off infections quickly and indiscriminately by engulfing bacteria and degrading them. Phagocytes are not particularly picky eaters and will happily engulf the injected ink particles. However, unlike the bacteria, phagocytes cannot degrade the large metallic ink particles, so they stay put in the cell. This cell type is also deeper than the part of the skin that constantly regenerates, so the phagocytes are never shedded, leaving the tattoo indefinitely. Tattoos can fade over a long period of time for a variety of reasons. UV exposure can fade tattoos through damaging the phagocytes or degrading the inks. Deeper layers of skin also shift and evolve over time, which can fade images. Different skin regions can also fade more quickly due to a higher cell turnover rate, such as on the palms of hands and the soles of feet. Finally, trauma, such as scarring, can also affect tattoos if the dermis is harmed. Tattoos can be purposefully removed through lasers, which break up the metallic ink in the skin. The large particles that were stuck in the phagocytes are broken up into smaller pieces, which are then more readily removed by the normal phagocytic processes. The laser must be adjusted for different colors, as they are made up of different types of metals. Generally, tattoo ink and removal are safe, and most danger from tattooing comes from dirty needle use. Tattooing is an ancient and modern cultural practice, which you may or may not partake in, but now you know how it works. This has been your 3-Minute Lesson. See you tomorrow. Welcome to 3-Minute Lesson. This week's theme, art. Today's topic, how tattoos work. Tattoos inject ink into the skin, creating a pigmented design that can last for decades or longer. Tattoos are found in cultures all around the world and date back to at least 3300 BCE in both Egypt and Europe. Tattooing existed in Native Americans before contact, broadly and ubiquitously in the Indo-Pacific and in sub-Saharan Africa. Although the purpose and design of tattoos varies between cultures, it is one of the most widely shared ancient and modern cultural practices. The secret to tattoos is in the ink. If you inject ink from something like a pen into skin, it will stick around for a short period of time but will quickly be broken down and removed by the body. Tattoo ink typically contains metals, such as nickel, cobalt, or copper, which can confer the different colors. When injected deep into the dermis layer of the skin, the resident immune cells take notice. Phagocytes are a type of immune cell, and some permanently reside in the dermis. Typically, their role is to fight off infections quickly and indiscriminately by engulfing bacteria and degrading them. Phagocytes are not particularly picky eaters and will happily engulf the injected ink particles. However, unlike the bacteria, phagocytes cannot degrade the large metallic ink particles, so they stay put in the cell. This cell type is also deeper than the part of the skin that constantly regenerates, so the phagocytes are never shedded, leaving the tattoo indefinitely. Tattoos can fade over a long period of time for a variety of reasons. UV exposure can fade tattoos through damaging the phagocytes or degrading the inks. Deeper layers of skin also shift and evolve over time, which can fade images. Different skin regions can also fade more quickly due to a higher cell turnover rate, such as on the palms of hands and the soles of feet. Finally, trauma, such as scarring, can also affect tattoos if the dermis is harmed. Tattoos can be purposefully removed through lasers, which break up the metallic ink in the skin. The large particles that were stuck in the phagocytes are broken up into smaller pieces, which are then more readily removed by the normal phagocytic processes. The laser must be adjusted for different colors, as they are made up of different types of metals. Generally, tattoo ink and removal are safe, and most danger from tattooing comes from dirty needle use. Tattooing is an ancient and modern cultural practice, which you may or may not partake in, but now you know how it works. This has been your 3-minute lesson. See you tomorrow. Welcome to 3-Minute Lesson. This week's theme, art. Today's topic, how tattoos work. Tattoos inject ink into the skin, creating a pigmented design that can last for decades or longer. Tattoos are found in cultures all around the world and date back to at least 3300 BCE in both Egypt and Europe. Tattooing existed in Native Americans before contact, broadly and ubiquitously in the Indo-Pacific and in sub-Saharan Africa. Although the purpose and design of tattoos varies between cultures, it is one of the most widely shared ancient and modern cultural practices. The secret to tattoos is in the ink. If you inject ink from something like a pen into skin, it will stick around for a short period of time but will quickly be broken down and removed by the body. Tattoo ink typically contains metals, such as nickel, cobalt, or copper, which can confer the different colors. When injected deep into the dermis layer of the skin, the resident immune cells take notice. Phagocytes are a type of immune cell, and some permanently reside in the dermis. Typically, their role is to fight off infections quickly and indiscriminately by engulfing bacteria and degrading them. Phagocytes are not particularly picky eaters and will happily engulf the injected ink particles. However, unlike the bacteria, phagocytes cannot degrade the large metallic ink particles, so they stay put in the cell. This cell type is also deeper than the part of the skin that constantly regenerates, so the phagocytes are never shedded, leaving the tattoo indefinitely. Tattoos can fade over a long period of time for a variety of reasons. UV exposure can fade tattoos through damaging the phagocytes or degrading the inks. Deeper layers of skin also shift and evolve over time, which can fade images. Different skin regions can also fade more quickly due to a higher cell turnover rate, such as on the palms of hands and the soles of feet. Finally, trauma, such as scarring, can also affect tattoos if the dermis is harmed. Tattoos can be purposefully removed through lasers, which break up the metallic ink in the skin. The large particles that were stuck in the phagocytes are broken up into smaller pieces, which are then more readily removed by the normal phagocytic processes. The laser must be adjusted for different colors, as they are made up of different types of metals. Generally, tattoo ink and removal are safe, and most danger from tattooing comes from dirty needle use. Tattooing is an ancient and modern cultural practice, which you may or may not partake in, but now you know how it works. This has been your 3-minute lesson. See you tomorrow.